Welcome to the podcast for Sound the Trumpet, How to Blow Your Own Horn, read by me, John Harnum, the author. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can find all kinds of supplemental material for this book at the podcast website, and that address is trumpetbook.wordpress.com. You can also find this book free in its entirety as a PDF at allabouttrumpet.com. Also, at that site are a whole bunch of videos, other lesson items, a whole bunch of useful things for playing trumpet, and other instruments as well. And so I invite you to check it out. If you can see your way towards making a donation, if you are enjoying the podcast and the book, and if you find it useful, that'd be awesome. I'm a graduate student, so, you know, money's a little tight. Anything you could give would be great. You might notice a little inconsistency in the sound of this podcast. My basement office was flooded last week. That's also why this podcast is a week late. The flooding was not serious, thankfully. My office is in the basement of a building that was built, I believe, in 1876. Anyway, in the late 1800s. The plumbing, fortunately, is from the 1960s, I believe. But so my office flooded. wasn't very bad, just a little bit of water, some books damaged and that sort of thing. But unfortunately, the flooding came from a sewage line. So my office, which is this windowless little room in the basement, now smells really bad. So I've had to relocate. So I am temporarily in this beautiful corner office up on the second floor, which is great. And that is part of the reason why the sound is a little bit different. So I hope it doesn't bug you. The information is still the same, of course. And I hope you enjoy it. Sorry for the delay. Let's get to it. This week on the podcast, we're doing Chapter 15, which is Trumpet Sound Effects. "There's nothing more serious than fun," said Don Cherry. Don Cherry is a trumpet master. He lived from 1936 to 1995. He played with John Coltrane. He was very into free jazz. He was known for playing a pocket trumpet, which is a little teeny trumpet. It's in the same range and everything as a regular trumpet. It just has more bends in it. And he's just a fantastic musician. This chapter on sound effects covers vibrato, alternate fingerings, scoops, doits, and falls, half-valve techniques, flutter tonguing, growl, a couple other things too. Some terms you need to know. The glissando is a smooth and continuous change from one note to another, done on a trumpet with the half-valve technique. A slide is another name for a glissando. It's also a name for the part of the trombone slide, or like your tuning slide. But in this case, it's a musical technique smoothly going from one note to another. A trill is changing quickly from one note to another note, usually above the primary note. A scoop is a short glissando into a note from below. A doit is a short rising glissando after a note. This is an onomatopoetic word, meaning that the word depicts what it's describing. So like meow is another onomatopoetic word. Ornament is a melodic embellishment, and ornaments can be written in or improvised by the performer. Ornaments covered in this chapter are vibrato, trills, turns, and shakes. This chapter is all about sounds on the trumpet that aren't what you might expect. Some are what you'd see in music for symphony, wind ensemble, or marching band. Some you're going to hear more often in jazz and other types of music. The major exception for this is the vibrato, which is used in most styles of music. Embellishing melodies is something that musicians have probably always done. In the Baroque period, musicians were expected to add their own flourishes to melodies. The modern practice of making these novelty sounds originated with jazz in New Orleans. Joe King Oliver, the mentor of Louis Armstrong, was one of the most famous early jazz trumpet players known for making these sounds through his horn. King Oliver would often play with a handkerchief over his valves to hide what he was doing so others couldn't copy him easily. And now in our world where we copy everything that we see and hear and read, copy it mostly online, it's interesting how copying can actually lead to more prosperity instead of less. So he was thinking that people would steal his ideas, and his ideas were his livelihood, so that was a bad thing for him. Sharing ideas actually turns out is really good for your livelihood, which is why this stuff is free. So anyway, times change. So these sounds are really fun to make, and folks seem to like them as long as they're not overdone. Some techniques like vibrato are absolutely essential to learn no matter what style you play. A good rule with these effects is a little goes a long way. These tricks are no substitute for good technique, and if you use ornaments in a solo, say in an improvised solo, think of them as spice. You know, too much pepper in a dish ruins the taste. So let's start with the vibrato. Vibrato is a type of ornament that's added to music to make it more beautiful. Vibrato is an ornament that is so important it gets a section all its own here in the book. Vibrato is used in all genres of music, with almost all instruments, and tasteful vibrato can make a sound much more beautiful. Vibrato is a slight raising and lowering of the pitch of a sustained note, and it can happen either quickly or slowly. If you've seen a violinist play, did you notice how her left hand moved back and forth during a long note? This is vibrato. This is how vibrato is done on a stringed instrument. Not guitar, but a stringed instrument like violin, viola, cello. When we play long, sustained tones, we vary the pitch by a tiny amount up and down to give the note more shape and more beauty. An added bonus is that a good vibrato can hide any slight intonation problems. So vibrato has two aspects. Amplitude, which refers to how wide the vibrato is. If you think of an opera singer, for example, this has a very wide vibrato, very large shifts in the pitch. And another aspect is frequency, which refers to how fast the vibrato is. If you think of, say, a classical violinist, often they use a fast vibrato. Another good example of that is mariachi music, like brass players, trumpet players specifically, and mariachi have very fast vibratos. So there are three ways to perform the vibrato on the trumpet that I'm going to show you, with your airstream, with your jaw, and with your hand. Now, there's some debate as to which of these is the right way, but I've seen professional musicians use any one of these three. Some believe that certain vibrato techniques are specific to certain types of music. So work with your teacher if you're unsure about what this means or whether you should even worry about it. But I'm going to show you these three ways and just mess around with them and see which one you like, see which one works for you. The first one we're going to do is the hand vibrato. So most of us have greater control over our hand than we do over the muscles that control breathing. And that's the reason why hand vibrato is one of the easier ones to perform. A lot of trumpet players have used this, and you can see, like, for example, Harry James used it, Rafael Mendez used this, lots of fantastic players. So this can work. This is one of the ways that I used to use for vibrato. I'm changing to a different way. I'll tell you about that later. So to do this, play second line G and sustain it for one full breath. And while the note sounds, use your right hand, the one that's on your vowels, and very gently rock the trumpet back and forth, about once a second. Speed isn't really that big of a deal. This is going to increase and decrease the pressure against your lips, and this is going to give you a nice oscillation of the pitch. The pitch is going to rise when you increase pressure, and it's going to fall when the pressure is released. Now, this is a really, really slight movement. In fact, if you're looking at someone do this, you can barely even see it. You really have to be watching. It only takes a slight movement. And that's really all you want, because any more than that is going to damage your chops. So don't use too much pressure. Vary the speed at which you move the trumpet back and forth. This can speed up or slow down the vibrato. So give that a try. It's pretty easy. The second one that we're going to talk about is the jaw vibrato. This is also very easy to do. So if you take that same G, you hold it out as you did before, and this time make a slight chewing motion with your front teeth. So your jaw is going to drop and then come back up and drop and come back up. You're not going to bring your teeth all the way together, but your jaw is going to drop a little, come up a little, drop a little, come up a little. And you're going to hear that pitch waver a little bit. And again, you can control the speed with how fast you do this jaw motion. A lot of players advocate the jaw vibrato because it doesn't involve putting added pressure on the embouchure, which can stress your chops and make you tire more quickly. This is one of the reasons I'm changing from using the hand vibrato to the jaw vibrato. My hand vibrato is so automatic that it's becoming a difficult thing to change, but I'm working on it. The third and more difficult one is the airstream vibrato. It's the type of vibrato that a singer or a good flute player uses, and a lot of trumpet players use it too. In one way, this is a better type of vibrato for trumpet players because, like the jaw vibrato, it doesn't involve adding more pressure against your chops. And although it's a little harder than the hand vibrato, it's still not that difficult. So try these and see which one you like better, which one sounds better. And again, work with your teacher to make sure you're doing the one that is perhaps specific to the type of music that you're listening to. So to get a vibrato with your air, play that G again, second line G, and as you sustain the note, give your air a little push, faster, about once a second. Now that example that I just showed you, that's going to be probably too much air, but that's the idea. You're going to use the muscles of your stomach and your diaphragm to give these little pulses. So check it out, try it, and see if it works. Now, when you do vibrato, there's some exercises you can do that'll help you in the beginning stages. This isn't something you're going to need to do, you know, throughout your trumpet playing career. But if you're unfamiliar with using vibrato, these are good exercises to get you started. And like I said, there are many different styles of vibrato. Make sure that you're familiar with the kind of music that you want to play so that you know what kind of vibrato to use. Like, for example, a trumpet player in a mariachi band is going to use a much wider and faster vibrato than, say, a symphony trumpet player. Of course, as long as the symphony trumpet player isn't playing a mariachi number. So the style of vibrato is going to vary depending on the type of music you're playing. Your best course of action is to listen to accomplished players and imitate what you hear. Your best teachers are in your record collection, so check them out. So there's some basic traits to vibrato that you should know. Generally speaking, a long tone is going to start with a straight tone, so no vibrato, and the vibrato is going to be added after a beat or two, or whatever makes sense, depending on the genre, the style. And the waves of the vibrato will gradually speed up as the end of the note is reached. It's a lot better to hear this than have explained, so go listen to your recordings and see if you can pick it up. It's there. I guarantee you it's in your recordings. So to gain some control of your vibrato, you're going to be methodical about doing it, these following exercises. And again, you can find these at the website for the podcast, trumpetbook.wordpress.com. The notes that you see are connected with a tie, so usually this means the notes are connected without any audible break between the notes. But in this case, you're going to use a pulse of air, or pull the horn gently against your chops or away from your chops, or move your jaw with the rhythm as shown. So vibrato in the real world is not strictly rhythmic, like I said. When you actually start using your vibrato to shape a note, the speed of the vibrato changes over the course of the note, like I mentioned earlier. There might be subtle variations between styles, like, say, mariachi or baroque or jazz or whatever you're doing. But for the most part, the vibrato is going to start slowly and speed up smoothly and gradually. This is one of the reasons you should practice vibrato at all speeds, like in the previous exercise. So for a really long note, the vibrato might start slowly, speed up, and then slow down again. And it's a matter of personal taste. It's a matter of the style that you're playing again. So listen to your favorite players and see how they do it. Here's a couple exercises that can help you with that speed up and slow down. It starts on a half note, goes to a quarter, then quarter note triplets, and then eighth notes, and then eighth note triplets, 16th notes, and then back to a whole note. So now we're going to move on to alternate fingerings. This is one of the easiest trumpet tricks that you can do. Alternate fingerings are fingerings other than the most common one. For example, the E in the fourth space of the treble clef staff is one of the most expressive notes on trumpet because it has more valve combinations than any other note. The usual fingering is open, no vowels. That E can also be played with the third valve, first and second valve, and all three valves. If you're interested, a list of alternate fingerings is below. And you can find more in the fingering chart at the back of this book and also at allabouttrumpet.com or trumpetbook.wordpress.com. It's all over the place. Alternate fingerings are used to do a one-note trill or for something maybe more intricate, maybe a rhythm on the same note. A good use of this can be heard in the second chorus of Lee Morgan's solo during the tune The Sidewinder. This is on the album The Best of Lee Morgan by Blue Note, put out by Blue Note. And in fact, Lee Morgan used this device a lot. You can hear Nat Adderley use this on his tune Work Song on the album The Best of Cannonball Adderley, the Capitol Years. He uses that a lot. Very cool, awesome player, Nat Adderley. So alternate fingerings can also be used to make a passage easier to finger or to tune problem notes. For example, that E that I was talking about, that fourth bass E, if you play it open, it's pretty flat. If you play it first and second valve, it's a little bit sharp, and it's easier to deal with that pitch problem when you're playing it one and two. So that's another good way to use alternate fingerings. A good way to practice these is to do them in a strict rhythmic pattern, as well as, you know, just flailing away at them. And in the exercises below, you're going to see the note, its fingering, and a sample rhythm to practice with each set of fingerings. You're going to find that some fingerings are more difficult than others, and some are nearly impossible at a fast tempo. Just practice all the variations for those notes with more than one alternate fingering. You'll notice that as you go higher in the range, there are more options for fingering, too. At first, don't use your tongue at all on this exercise. Just work the vowels and get the patterns as precise as you can with the fingers alone. So that rhythm is going to be in your fingers. When you've got the pattern down, try using your tongue on some of the notes. For example, you could tongue the first note of every measure for the whole exercise. You could tongue every beat, every other beat. Try tonguing randomly, you know, then variations. There's all kinds of possibilities here. The fingerings are shown in the examples as valve numbers. So 0 is open. 1 is first valve, 2 is second valve, 1 and 2, obviously 2, 3, that should make sense to you. Below the rhythm for this exercise are the notes with their alternate fingerings. So if the 16th note triplet in the rhythm below look intimidating to you, it's the second to the last measure, just put 6 notes evenly in one beat and you've got it. So if you want a variation, you can play it backwards too. So here is example 15.4. Now we're going to move on to Scoops, Deutz, Falls, and the Horse Whinny. All of these strange words in the title are using pretty much the same technique. It's a half valve technique. And as the name implies, you do it by pushing your valves halfway down to play. So it's just that simple. Give it a try. One of the best ways to get your trumpet talking, to evoke this vocal quality from the horn, is to use the half valve technique. You've probably already done this accidentally when not pounding your vowels down, or maybe when a vowel is stuck or slow coming up. And done accidentally, it's not a good thing, because most of the time you want note changes to be clean and clear. The half valve technique is a great tool if you want to give your sound a little more vocal quality. This is great, especially for jazz. One of the terms you're going to see in this section a lot is glissando, which is a long, smooth slide from one note to another, either upwards or downwards. And slide is another name for a glissando. So if you think of a trombone playing a low note, the slide, this is a different use of the word, of course, all the way out, so the arm is all the way extended. With the continuous sound, the slide is pulled in, and the sound rises smoothly upwards. You can think of like a slide whistle, also does this. A downward slide on trombone sounds like a bag bombing playing. Little kids love this sound. A couple other instruments that can easily produce a smooth glissando are voice and violin. So on trumpet, a glissando is done with the half valve. The half valve technique bypasses the horn's ability to lock into the pitches in the overtone series. And this allows you to make a smooth glissando from the low note to a high note, or vice versa. You can do this technique with just one valve halfway down, two vowels, all three of them. It's pretty versatile. Usually all three gives you a smoother slide. The thing to remember, though, is that with all of these half-valve techniques, you've got to use a lot of air to make the sound stand out. Half-valve notes are quieter than regularly fingered notes, so to make them heard, you really have to blow. Try the following. Start at a low pitch with all three valves halfway down. Make the sound go steadily upwards as far as you can, and come back down. Keep your air moving. Try it with only the first valve, and then only the second valve. One and two, two and three, one and three. As many variations as you can come up with.
And you'll feel there's a little bit different quality to each of these. And just like with any special technique, a little goes a long way with this. Beware, wary of overusing this or any special technique, because overuse makes the effect a little less dramatic. So let's start with a scoop. Try this. You're going to play an F in the first valve and go to a G, the next note up a whole step. But you're going to let your first valve come up really slowly. Just blow steadily through that change in the note. And you're going to hear this smear, this great, great sound from the F to the G. So try it again and try to emphasize the smear by blowing a little harder when the valve is between notes. You can help the smear by bending the pitch with your chops as you make the change. And if you remember, we did some pitch bending back in the tuning chapter. So when you use this half valve trick just before a note, it's called a scoop. So if you scoop into the note, it's called a scoop, a glissando up into the note. Scoops are a great way to ease into a pitch and are effective when you're playing a melody or improvising a solo. You could do a scoop with one valve halfway down before a note, or two, or three. It kind of depends on what makes sense. As you approach where the note falls in the rhythm, so you gradually let your vowels come up until you hit that note, and then your vowels should be where they should be for the note. I hope that makes sense. A scoop doesn't change the rhythm of the note at all, so you have to start the scoop a little bit before the note actually is supposed to sound. And if you start before the note in this way, it doesn't alter the rhythmic placement of the scooped note. So here's what a scoop looks like written down. Of course, you're not going to be able to see this, but you can go to trumpetbook.wordpress.com and find it. And this is also sound example 15.5.
1, 2, 3.
Next term is the doit. This is an onomatopoetic word, which means that it represents the sound, like meow or crash or something like that. It's pronounced doit, even though it looks like do it when you spell it out. A doit is an upwards glissando, and it happens after a note. Usually there's a rest after the note to give the doit some breathing space. A doit continues upward in pitch after the note is played, and it can be quick, a little quick upward sound, or it can last several beats as a long glissando. It depends on what the music calls for and what the director is asking you to do and what you want if there is no director. So it's up to the performer or the group leader how long the doit should be, or the section leader. Doits are often seen after high notes. It adds a dramatic effect when the note is high already and it's taken a little bit higher for the doit. So here's what it looks like. And again, this is sound clip 15.6. The next thing we're going to cover is the rip. This is also an upwards type of glissando, but it's more rough sounding, and it does not use the half valve technique. Rips are a little tougher to perform because they take a lot more air, more lip strength, and a good ear. A rip can be performed with any valve combination, including open, but it's easiest when it's done using all three valves down. So during the rip, press all three valves down and blow through all the partials until you get to the target note, where you quickly revert to the correct fingering of the target note. This is sound clip 15.6B, as in boy. Now, you'll see in this that I'm going from F-sharp up to an A. And normally, that F-sharp in the first space is fingered second valve. So what I do when I do that rip is I'm playing that note second valve. As I do the rip, I'm putting all three valves down, glissando up to the A. As soon as I get to that A, I switch to the correct fingering, which is 1 and 2, and there I am at the A. This is the same technique you'd use for any note if you want to use 1, 2, and 3. Now, you know, there's no reason you have to use 1, 2, and 3. You get a lot more partials when you do that, but you can use any valve combination. You have to just use a lot of air.
1, 2, 3.
So next up is the fall. The fall is the opposite of the scoop and the doit. The fall occurs after a note, and it's a downward glissando. And as with the doit, there's usually a rest after the fall, and the length of the glissando is, again, up to the performer or the leader. For obvious reasons, the fall usually happens after notes higher in the trumpet range. So there are two types of fall. There's a smooth one, the half valve, and a louder, sort of rougher one. For the smooth fall, you use the half valve technique, just like before, and you just really blow through that fall to make it heard. For the rougher fall, you have a few options. One is to simply leave the valves as they are and fall off the note, also blowing hard all the way down so that the trumpet speaks through those partials. This is difficult to do if you're not used to it. For the other option, when you fall off the note, you can quickly finger all three vowels randomly and blow really hard as you're falling down through the range. This is going to make the fall a little smoother than the first option, and it'll still be plenty loud. A third option is to push all three vowels down as you fall off the note, and again, really blow as it goes down. This is like a reverse rip, I guess you could think of it. So experiment with all three of these and see which one you like. They sound a little different, some are easier than others. And again, it depends on what the leader or your section leader or the music calls for. So here is example 15.7. Up next is the horse whinny. This is one of the fun and funnier uses of the half valve technique. And probably the most famous example is from the Christmas song Sleigh Ride. There's that horse whinny towards the end, right after the slap, from the slapstick. To do this, you're going to push all three vowels halfway down. And again, you have to blow really hard to make enough sound to be heard. You start on a relatively low note, maybe around second line G or so. And with the vowels down, you're going to do a scoop up, say to a high G, and then you're going to fall off the note. So we're using several techniques here, the half-valve technique, the scoop all the way up to the G, and the fall back down. As you're coming down on the fall, you're going to shake the horn back and forth against your chops, all the way down to the low pitch around C. Now, if you've heard a horse, basically you just make it sound like a horse, and to do that, you shake the horn against your chops. Now, don't shake it too hard. You might damage your lips, and just use your ears to see if you've got it right. If you sound like a horse, you're all set. So again, this is Chapter 15 sound clip, the horse mini. So up next is the growl and flutter tuning. When you play the blues, or say you're playing with a plunger, not the one in the bathroom, of course, but an actual sink plunger, growling through your horn is a great effect, especially if you're playing like a really dirty blues number, or you want to sound angry, you know, or just really strident tone. This technique is also used in a lot of modern pieces to create a really brash, kind of in-your-face sound. The growl and the flutter tone are used pretty sparingly, and usually only for one or maybe a couple notes in a musical phrase. Just use your judgment. Just listen and hear what other players do. I heard a live concert once by Wynton in Branford Marcellus on NPR, and Wynton improvised at least a full chorus using a growl the entire time. It was one of the longest uses of the growl I've ever heard. It was startling. It was just a masterful use of the technique. It was amazing to listen to. Another master of the growl and plunger combination is Cootie Williams, who's a trumpeter for Duke Ellington. His version of Caravan is about the coolest thing I've ever heard. It's one of my favorite all-time tunes. If I can, I'll put a little clip of that on the website for you. So you can kind of interchange the growl and the flutter tone. They do have slightly different sounds, so try them both and see which one you prefer. Learn them both and you'll be able to choose the right sound for the right tune, the right feel. So first up, the growl. The growl is a little easier of these two. And to do it, you just simply growl in the back of your throat as you play. So like that. Before you try it on the horn, you know, do it without the horn, just like I just did. The sound you're listening for should be this rough, grumbly sound, kind of like you're clearing your throat. And again, you can hear this clip next. When you do a growl, you naturally use the ah shape inside of your mouth. So this might make it tough to use higher in the range. It'll take a little more practice. So while you're making the sound, practice changing the shape of the inside of your mouth with the ah and the e vowel shapes. If you have trouble holding note while you're growling, just make your oral cavity, that inside of your mouth, a little smaller. So start in a second line G or lower to try this effect, and then gradually use higher and higher notes and see if you have as easy of a time doing it up high as you do down low. And if you get a plunger, you can use the growl with the plunger too. That's pretty fun. We're going to get to plunger use in a later chapter. The flutter tongue is a case where a loose tongue is a good thing. It takes a pretty loose tongue and steady airflow to master this technique. The tip of your tongue is going to hit the edge of your soft palate, that flat place just behind your teeth. It's going to hit this very rapidly when you do the flutter tongue. Like that. And the placement of your tongue is pretty crucial. If you are placing it too far back in your mouth, it's not going to work. too close to your teeth, and it's not going to work. The looseness of your tongue is also critical. If it's not relaxed, the tongue's not going to move rapidly. And airflow is really important to keep the tongue moving rapidly, so move that air. If you can't get your tongue to flutter immediately, just try this. With a steady airflow, touch your tongue to the middle of the roof of your mouth, so back in your mouth. And as you're blowing that air, gradually move it forward in your mouth towards your teeth. So it's going to sound something like this. You can probably hear that first you hear just air, and as my tongue gets closer to the front of my mouth, eventually it starts to flutter like it's supposed to. So if you can find that sweet spot where your tongue flutters, that's what you're after. If this doesn't work, try making a purring sound, maybe like you're a happy cat. If you can't get it, don't be discouraged. Just keep trying until you can do it. You can check out some sound clips that I've embedded here. They're on the website. There's also a video lesson on this. If you go to allabouttrumpet.com, it might help. A little more explanation. Next up are ornaments. Ornaments, of course, aren't just for Christmas. For a long, long time, musicians have taken a given melody and added things to it to make the melody more personal, more intricate, or more interesting. Ornaments is the collective name of those melodic embellishments. There are a bunch of them, including trills, turns, grace notes, mordants, lip trills, also known as shakes, appoggiaturas. There's a whole bunch of them, and we're going to do several. When these ornaments are written in the music, you don't really need to worry about when to use them, of course, because there they are, written down. But depending on the musical setting, all these ornaments can be used really at any time. If you're sitting third chair in a symphony orchestra, you should probably stick to what's written so you don't get fired, and don't improvise your own ornamentation of the melody, even if you have a melody. However, if you're playing lead in a jazz band, if you're in a small combo or performing solo, you can insert ornaments whenever you think it sounds good. And as with anything extra, use good taste. Listen to other trumpet players and musicians and other instruments to hear what the professionals do. Get a good idea of that. We're going to start with trills. Trills are a fairly common ornament in classical music, especially Baroque music, and they're an interesting effect. A trill is a rapid change from one note to the next higher note in the key signature, and you can see how trills are written to the left or on the block. You can see the squiggly line, which is just above the TR in a piece of music, and it means the same thing. Sometimes you see the TR, sometimes you just see the squiggly line, but again, they mean the same thing. So the trill on the A that I've shown would be played by moving rapidly between the A and the next higher note in the key signature. In this case, it's a B, B natural. Sometimes the trill is started on the higher note. This is often in Renaissance music and the like. So trills also often begin slowly and speed up to as fast as you can do the trill, and then slow back down again before ending on the principal tone of the trill, the note that's written down. So here's an example of where you might find a trill in a piece of music. It's on the website, and you can actually hear this too, coming up. Two really good sources for listening to trills are the second movement of the Hummel Trumpet Concerto in E-flat, and the melody of the tune Siora by Lee Morgan. If you watch the video for this trill that I've got at allabouttrumpet.com, you'll hear the beginning of that Siora tune, beautiful tune by Lee Morgan. Next are mordants. A mordant is a rapid single alteration between the written note and its upper neighbor, or the upper mordant. This is the upper mordant. It can also be done with its lower neighbor, the lower mordant. So here's an example of each, and sound clips, of course, can be found at allabouttrumpet.com. First is the upper mordant, and then the lower mordant. And they're written two different ways, too, so check them out. Turns. This is another very common ornament. It turns around the principal note. That's why it's called a turn. And turns are indicated with this sort of S-like symbol. It's an S turned on its side, sort of. And turns are performed by playing the principal note, the written one, then rising up to the upper neighbor tone, the note just above it, back to the principal, down to the lower tone, and then back to the principal note again. And it's probably takes a lot longer to talk about this than actually do it. And so I'm just going to let you listen to the sound clip. So here it is. Thank you. Terns are very effective ornaments when used sparingly and in the right places. Again, if you look at listen to the final movement of the Hummel Trumpet Concerto, I mean, it's got enough turns in there to choke a horse. It's a really, really great, great movement of that concerto. So check it out. They're very fast too, very difficult. It's probably one of the more difficult parts of that concerto. And of course, turns aren't limited to classical music. You can hear master players use this device all over the place. So check it out, learn them, so you've got it in your toolkit. Next up is grace notes. Grace notes are more formally known as accacciatura. That's the Italian word for it. They're pretty easy to do. Grace note is a very quick note before the principal note. They're usually performed right on the beat that's designated for the note. So unlike scoops, which started before the note, grace notes are used right on the note. And they're written in music by writing a very, very tiny note just before the principal note. And sometimes they'll have a little slash on the stem of it too. Grace notes are usually only a half or a whole step away from the principal note. They're usually not much more than that. So they're one note away in the key signature, if that makes sense. And in jazz, these are done spontaneously. In classical music, often these are written down. Even though originally they may have been done spontaneously, they've become standardized. So get help with your teacher if you're unsure about that. And it's probably safe to say that grace notes are probably more common than just about any other ornament, except the vibrato, of course. They're a neat effect, so check them out. The appoggiatura is similar to the grace note, but it's longer. The term is based on the Italian word appoggiare, I don't speak Italian, so something like that, which means to lean. The appoggiatura is more significant melodically because its length is half of the note which follows. So, for example, appoggiatura looks very similar to a grace note, but if you look closely, there's a teeny little note, just like with the grace note, but there's no slash. Okay, the grace note has a little slash on it. The appoggiatura has no slash. So check out the written example for that. And here's the sound clip. The shake or the lip trill. This type of ornament is kind of like a lip slur on steroids. The shake's been used in jazz for a long time, and it's an exciting addition when used in the right place. And as with all these other ornaments, too much of it ruins the effect, so use them sparingly. If you listen to your favorite players to get an idea of when to use this, you'll figure it out. Louis Armstrong is a master of many things, shake included, so go check him out. Louis Armstrong. My apologies for those of you purists out there. The shake happens in the upper register of the trumpet, usually above the staff. The partials are closer together up here in the high range, and this makes shakes easier to perform. They're usually easiest from the fourth line D on up into the high range. A shake is often notated in the music, but it's up to the performer to insert it. It's often notated, say, in jazz band, big band pieces. Other places, it's not. It's just another ornament that you have in your tool bag, and you can use it if it makes sense. For example, in Mambo Influenciado, a tune that I played with a quartet of mine, I decided to put a shake on the D at the end of that first phrase, and I can insert an example right here. So the way to practice the shake is to first practice lip slurs. If you got the lip slurs down, you're ready to sort of take the next step. So if you start an F sharp on the first bass, and work up through all seven valve combinations, you're going to use a metronome and gradually increase the speed until you can do four notes per beat at 120 beats per minute. So here's 120 beats per minute. Right? So if you do four beats per snap, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, makes sense? I hope so. Air support is critical. And you're going to use that ah-e shape to your mouth, just like you did with the lip source. So ah-e-ah-e-ah-e-ah-e-ah-e-ah-e-ah-e-ah is what you're going to use to make that happen. Once you've got those low note speed down, you can click the metronome even faster. to get the shake going even faster. So if you start on the top line, F sharp, 1, 2, and 3 again, and continue on up the valve combinations, just like you did lower, a little bit of pressure in and out might help you to get the shake up higher, but be careful not to overuse this mouthpiece pressure technique. So use your tongue and airspeed instead. One of the great practitioners of this, of course, is Maynard Ferguson. He does some really amazing shakes that are just screaming up in the stratosphere. Which reminds me, the shake can either go a very short distance, you know, say from one partial to the next, or it can be very wide. It can go really high and back down to the principal note and high again. So again, depends on what you need. So those are most of the ornaments. There are others, but those are the main ones. Lots of stuff to practice in this chapter. Of course, all this information is great, and I hope it's helpful for you. But the very best way to learn these cool sounds or these funny sounds or any kind of sound is to just experiment on your own. You know, use your creativity, your imagination to think up different ways that you can use this hunk of brass to make a sound nobody's heard before. You know, listen to all the trumpet players that you can find, either live, which is definitely the best way, or on recordings. I just went to a performance last night of Stravinsky's The History of the Soldier, which is a great piece of music. And of course, the players here at Northwestern are just fantastic. So a friend of mine was playing his trumpet recital, and boy, it's great. So live music is awesome. Go check it out if you have the opportunity. This is your very best source for discovering what trumpet sounds are out there and what good players are doing. So yeah, that's it. Just keep practicing. Good luck. Keep at it. Up next, there's a whole bunch of things that you can and should stick in the end of your horn to change its sound, and they're called mutes. And we're going to cover all the mutes in the next chapter, and we're going to learn what they are, how and when to use them, how to keep them out in the foot and play. They're a great way to get even more cool sounds from your horn. So good luck with your practice, and talk to you later.